Today's show, it's SEC Media Week. We break down which schools could make the playoffs. Kalen DeBoer's hot start, pressure on LSU. Is Colorado everyone's Super Bowl? And a Taco Bell order gone terribly wrong.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
They just absolutely get hammered drinking scotch on the way home and make a vote as the scores came in.
Russ Gellinger.
He's going to be part of the media.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Army beat Villanova 6-0.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and it is SEC Media Week. Just means
not
more.
Not day or days, really. It's a whole damn week now.
Nobody does a day anymore, do they?
No, probably not.
Like the Mountain West.
Pac-12,
where they made it for a cocktail party.
The Pac-2 had their Dan. By the way, I was approached multiple times at the Pac-2 media day with the statement of "This better be on the pod." So there you go. We got Pac-2 media day on
so
the pod.
So now it is.
Don't call it a media day though, Dan. It was a cocktail hour basically with an open bar in the back, and the Pac-12 commissioner Teresa Gould. Kicked off the event by saying, we got to open the bar in the back and we plan to use it because if there's any conference that earned the right to drink, it's the Pac-12. So there you go. It was a nice.
That is an immortal line from her.
Yeah. That is a great line. Yeah. Well, I mean, in the spirit of this pod, we're going to have, we will discuss cocktail hour, media hour, media cocktail. What was it? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Did you get a free drink?
I did, yeah. Many free drinks were had.
Many?
Not me. What are we doing? I didn't drink too much, Dan. You know, I had to, I have to keep professional, media professional, whatever. Yeah.
Two beers or three or four?
Or four.
Seven, nine, 12. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Gundy it out?
No. I didn't have to drive anywhere, Dan. I didn't have a car.
I know. I understood. That's why I would not have made light of it if you weren't Ubering around Vegas or is in your hotel. Anyway, Pac-2 media cocktail hour. Tremendous idea. Great line. And I did see that. Eves and Cougs after dark, I think. I did get a email inviting me. I did not make it, though.
Yeah. The other Vegas one day happening, the Mountain West, they had their own classic moment where it was at a casino hotel where you had to be 21 years old to enter. Well, the best player in the league, Ashton Junty, the running back from Boise State's 20, so he couldn't go. So he had to have his own little podium media day at a different casino.
Yeah, I saw that. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Why? Circa's apparently incredibly strict. Like, they ID everybody, and you got to be 21 to get on the premises. I was ID'd every time I walked in there.
Glad they're obeying all of the laws out in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
come on. Right. You got to let the guy. I mean, it's a media. It's not a. He's not like at the tables. Yeah, that was. I need a new one for Mountain West. I felt bad for them on that one. Although that got him some good attention. Excellent player. Well, it worked.
Really good.
Yeah. Really good football player. Unfortunately, had to go to the. What, did they take him to Circus? That's what they should have done.
I can't remember where they put him. Stashed him off somewhere else.
Remember that idea for a casino? I was as someone who spent 8 days at the Luxor this year, 8 nights at the Luxor,
and is never going
to
get over.
No, I did go over to Circus because that's right next door. That casino's still standing. The whole concept of like a casino, but then there were like kids' areas, so you could just pawn off your kids into Vegas while you sat at the craps table.
Yeah.
Getting hammered.
Watch my child while I blow my money.
Yeah.
Circus, the daycare casino. I mean, holy crap. What an idea.
You got to go back and say, you have to keep the kids. I don't have enough money to pay you.
Vegas is a family place. Family vacation. It's not. It's just not. That's what they were trying, though. That's what they were trying. New York had its little roller coaster, all that. Anyway, It's SEC Media Day week, Media Week. We could talk a bunch of different things here, but I was intrigued by this over the weekend because I think, obviously, the person that will be most missed at SEC Media Week or be conspicuous by his absence is Nick Saban. We will not get a Nick Saban speech for the first time in a long time. He ran the league. He's a many years, won national titles at LSU and Alabama. And he isn't there. Kalen DeBoer is fresh off his national.
Dan?
Oh, he might be there. That's right.
He is here. He is here. I think he's going to be part of the media, of course, on set with ESPN and the SEC Network, I believe. So that should be interesting. I think he's here all week, too. Every day he'll grace us with his presence.
I stand corrected. That's right. He's a working media guy like us. Welcome to the business, Coach.
Just a blue collar, Dan. Just a blue collar journalist. That's what he is this week.
Yes, yes. Bring up that West Virginia work ethic. Working the gas station, his dad's gas station. Anyway, over the weekend, Alabama picked up. I know Ross, you're a big fan of recruiting news. But they picked up another really good 4-star recruit, and the various recruiting services have Alabama ranked either number 1 or number 2 in most of their classes, most of the class rankings. 5 stars, like, you know, really, really strong recruiting. I'm looking at 24/7 composites, got them number 2 behind Ohio State. Others on 3 might have number 1, whatever it is. Very, very strong recruiting. And one of the things with Saban and why he was so good at Alabama, of course, was he became almost a juggernaut in recruiting. I mean, they just had player after player, the depth of their roster. They'd roll into a season with 25 stars, you know. And one of the questions for Kalen DeBoer before he ever coaches a game was, could he maintain that? Now, I don't know if this is quite that level of class yet, but I would be very pleased if I was Alabama that Nick Saban left, but the recruiting is ostensibly just as strong or something very, very close. And I know while Saban was there, they spent a lot of time as a program and as a school building up for the inevitable day that he would not be there, and the ability to maintain the recruiting. They spent a lot of money on a lot of different things and seems to be paying off. So Kalen DeBoer has not coached a game yet at Alabama, but Ross, what do you think starting off of how he's done in everything else, including the acquisition of talent?
Yeah, pretty impressive so far, right? And I'll say he assembled, if you look, a pretty good group of assistants. You know, he brought a lot of guys from Washington, but he also plucked some guys who are more native of the Southeast footprint, which you need to do, obviously. He brought kind of his, I don't know if you call him like a general manager over with him from Washington, Courtney Morgan, who's pretty widely respected in the industry. So he surrounded himself with really good people, and that's the start, right? When you're at an environment that you know, you're kind of unfamiliar with, maybe a footprint on recruiting you're unfamiliar with, and he's brought in folks who know the landscape, and they've hit the ground running. That, you know, that's one thing about college athletics and the brand of some of these schools, right? I mean, the school in a lot of ways sells itself. It sometimes doesn't really matter all that much, right? Who's in the chair, the main chair. What matters is the logo and the colors and the brand of the school. And if you do enough as a coach and recruiter, at Alabama, a place like Alabama, and there's some places, right, Ohio State, Texas, that the brand is so big, you know, you should get players and get really good players, And I think that's what they're doing there.
Yeah, I guess like Alabama recruiting well is not a news flash, but I don't know. It can fade off a little bit too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there was probably an immediate hope, understandably, within the league that, oh, without Saban, well, they just can't keep going at the same level. And they might not. We'll see. But they're not falling off a cliff, that's for sure. I think that, first of all, Kellen DeBoer was a good hire. And secondly, I think he's shown an impressive ability to maintain a roster and then to replenish for future rosters. You know, one of the big things he did was to keep Jalen Milroe at quarterback. And I think Jalen was probably predisposed to want to stay to begin with. He's a guy that like start a task. He wants to complete a task, and he started at Alabama and he wants to finish at Alabama. Already got one degree, working on a second one. But they retained, you know, a couple of very good offensive linemen from the previous regime. They brought in Parker Brailsford, their star center from Washington. They brought in Jeremy Bernard, really good receiver from Washington. And I think Milroe and Bernard have already established a good connection. That same big play vertical sort of passing attack that DeBoer was known for at Washington. I think there's a great chance we'll see that now transferred to Alabama. And that was one of the reasons that things they could sell Milroe on too. Hey, you see Michael Penix drop back and fire that thing deep? Well, you got the arm to do it too. Let's go. And so I think that helped there. Obviously the biggest loss was Caleb Downs transferring, you know, like superstar safety, 107 tackles as a freshman. And he's going to Ohio State. So losing him was big. It's kind of interesting looking at the Phil Steele magazine. I've got my Bible that I'll keep with me in my bag until January. But only one Alabama player on Steele's first team All-SEC defense, which is unusual there. But all things considered, current team talent level, good enough to compete. Absolutely in the SEC. Probably good enough to make the playoff. And future talent level looks like that's trending well as well.
Yeah, I think he's had a terrific start to this, and obviously he'll, you know, always important, the SEC Media Week speech. That's always a big.
I will say,
completely meaningless.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, Ross knows one of the traditions of this thing is Saban summoning people to a. Like a conference room or a hotel suite to kind of give his thoughts. It's off the record, but and you sit down and it's not like Saban says, "What are your questions?" He tells you what he wants to talk about, you know, and kind of sets his agenda for here's what I think is important. And that was always really, you know, informational and interesting. And that I'm sure will be missed, although he'll be spouting off presumably next to Feinbaum doing that or somewhere within the SEC network hierarchy there, but that was always a good part of SEC media week.
Saban and Feinbaum, colleagues, right?
Yeah.
Does buddy, Nick got to make the coffee? You guys got to make the coffee?
Oh, Feinbaum? Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. All right. Obviously, the story of SEC is that Texas and Oklahoma are in it. And obviously, this media day is, which was once relegated basically to that hotel next to the shopping mall in Hoover, Alabama, because that's where Bear Bryant would want it. We're now into the modern era. We're in Dallas, moving the thing around. It's in Nashville, a lot, Atlanta. But I think obviously it's going to be a huge element to that, and we'll just see what everybody says as the week goes on. But I think the other big development, I don't know if it's biggest, but it might be for a lot of these schools, is the expansion of the playoff. Because as much as the SEC has dominated, how many schools have made the playoff from the SEC? Is it? I know Bama, Georgia, and LSU.
Bama, Georgia, LSU.
Auburn was a year
First year.
Auburn was before the last of the BCS.
Did they make it the first year, though?
No, it was the last year.
No, that
year
was
of the
2013
BCS.
Was the last of the BCS. Yeah.
No, I seem to. I remember, no. like, didn't Oregon play Auburn?
Yeah, the last year before the. No.
Wasn't
Oregon played Florida State. Oregon played Florida State.
Oh, Florida State. That's right. Yeah. So is it only three?
Seems like there should be more than that.
Thanks.
But maybe not.
Yeah.
Tennessee didn't.
Nobody else from the East, that's for sure.
Florida hasn't. South Carolina hasn't.
Yeah, Georgia, Auburn, Alabama, and LSU. Yeah.
Mark. So I look at it this year. I'm looking at this thing and saying, we don't know how many they're going to get in. But I think you can realistically say, I think there's nine teams that can walk into media day or walk in this season and say, I've got a chance. And it's Georgia. It's obviously Georgia. It's Alabama, Texas, Ole Miss, LSU, Missouri, Tennessee, Oklahoma, and Texas A&M. I think all are staring at a season where they could say, I can make the playoffs if a lot of things go right. I'm not saying A&M and Oklahoma are sitting there saying, we got this. But the possibilities here for all of those schools, if things break right, if the schedule breaks right, like Tennessee and Oklahoma are playing each other, I think in the third week, like kind of like a swing game for playoff contention. Again, it doesn't put you in, but it keeps you alive. What are your thoughts on who could potentially make this? Maybe someone else is going to yell at me and go, no, we could do it too. Because, I mean, there's no lack of bravado in the SEC as their chance. But and what this would mean as just I mean, look, the fans are always excited. But I think most years you went in thinking, how good could we really get and what that means? What do you think, Pat?
Absolutely. I think this is one of the reasons this is the most interesting year of SEC football ever is no conference probably is going to benefit more from the expanded playoff than the SEC. It's been the deepest. It's been the best. And so you're going to get more of your teams in there. And I think, yes, those nine that you named off, well, varying degrees of likelihood, but sure, they can all right now, mid-July, sit there and say, hey, why not? And I will give you one more. With at least a puncher's chance if a lot of things go well, and that's Kentucky, which I think the schedule sets up well. They've got eight starters back on offense. They've got 10 on defense. They did their usual rent a quarterback through the portal, and we'll see if Brock Vandegrift, who was beaten out by Carson Beck at Georgia, if he turns out to be really good, then that could be the key component there. They start off with four games in a row at home, including their first two SEC games, which is South Carolina and Georgia. If you knock off Georgia and you start 4-0, hey, you're going to be in the mix. They got to go at Ole Miss. They got to go at Tennessee. They got to go at Texas. But there's no easy schedules in the SEC. That's not, you know, prohibitively harder than a lot of other ones, I don't think. So just in case, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm not predicting Kentucky to go to the playoff, but I think you could almost add them as a 10th possibility there.
Apologies to the Cats. I mean, Florida, they get it all together. They got the schedule, but yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, Florida.
No, it's wild, right? I mean, everyone's got a shot.
Yep.
Vanderbilt, Dan?
I think they're still in the building mode. It's talking season. We're positive about everybody.
The Bulldogs.
Clark Lee did say when we were in Destin, he said that when we were in Destin in the spring that it's his best roster. So we'll take that for what that's worth.
I mean, that's pretty good. I think this is going to be, it's just a different mindset you're going into. And I think this is what, you know, there's a lot of bashing of the playoff. Well, you know, not every game matters. There's going to be a three loss team in there. And I get it. It cuts against the sensibilities of how this sport has long been run. It was always this idea that somebody would create an absolute juggernaut of a team and win all their games by huge margins. I always think like Bud Wilkerson's Oklahoma teams like set the tone for how college football is viewed. There's this this monster out in the plains and they just are destroying it. That's the national champion, right? And everyone was fine with that. We were voting. We had sports writers voting in the like 40s. Like there's no TV, right? Like they're getting games. Not they're just reading like scores that are coming across the telegraph. And then they're ranking the teams. And that's how we just, yeah. But that's how we did it, right? And it's one slip up.
Preposterous thing ever, really.
The most preposterous thing ever. The AP poll champions, or UPI. Remember the old, the UPI?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. These guys in the 1938, they're riding trains to games, smoking in the press box. Great times, by the way.
It would have been kind of fun to ride a train around, you know?
Yeah, working for the Enid, Oklahoma Daily Sunset or something, right? The afternoon paper.
Yeah. But you're going to the games. Hell, the Enid paper doesn't exist anymore.
Probably,
so,
you know. There's probably a paper in Enid.
I hope there
good
is.
Good folks at Enid.
I hope so.
I love the occasional, I'll get this like, something will go, I can't believe you randomly picked this, like my old hometown. Mention on the pod. Old Enid doesn't get a lot of pub out there in the anymore. No. Yeah. Yeah. They just absolutely get hammered drinking scotch on the way home and make a vote as the scores came in. See what Army did? You know,
Army like, beat Villanova 6-0.
No, oh, Army couldn't beat Oklahoma. I'm picking. This was the vote. National champ. Everyone was like, hey, okay, great. And then people are like, this playoff, this is terrible. We need to go back to the old system. Like, that's the old system, folks. That's the old system. Right. They didn't even watch. There were no highlights.
No.
Maybe they get the radio, you know, WGN out of Chicago. They're playing the Notre Dame game. Listen to a couple plays of that. Yeah, totally ridiculous. But you went in, and so you thought, hey, there's going to be this. And then we're like, well, if there's this juggernaut here, and then there's this other juggernaut over here, maybe we could meet up in a bowl game. But then the bowls all had their little contracts, so that wouldn't necessarily work. But maybe that would sort some stuff out. And that's our system. But the system now is going to be, get me in. Because in the NFL, and I know you got to buy, but like the NFL, it's like, get in the tournament. That's all they talk about. Just get in. Maybe you can host games. Maybe you can. But once you're in, anything can happen. And it just opens up a huge possibility for these teams. And I look at Ole Miss, obviously. He's not been in a playoff. Missouri, Tennessee. Those three, to me, are the ones that I'm going into this season saying, this is really an exciting season for us. We don't have to be perfect. Because I think reasonably you'd look at any of those three and say, we're not going to be perfect. If this was last year's system, it would take absolute magic to make it. But now you say, hey, we got a shot, and that's really cool. Oklahoma, and I'm just saying that because Oklahoma, Texas, the others haven't. And even A&M, I think even A&M's a little bit more needs a straight, you know, they need something to come down on the river to give them a straight flush or something. But Tennessee, Missouri, and Ole Miss, I think, are walking in with the same possibilities as Alabama, Texas, and Georgia are, and things like that.
Well, think about the last few years, right? I mean, Ole Miss would have gotten in, right? Ole Miss would have been, I think Ole Miss would have been the last team in last year if they had a 12-team playoff. I'm trying to remember what the doing the numbers and running the numbers and stuff, but I'm pretty sure like Ole Miss was going to be the last. They were going to be like the 11 seed, if the playoff happened last year, and maybe 2 years ago, Ole Miss was there, and Missouri was right there too. Missouri would have made it too last year. I think Missouri would have been like the 9 seed or something last year if they had a playoff. So you got to be really excited if you're those fan bases where you know you can drop not just a one game. Right, but you could probably drop two games, depending on who it is. But you could probably drop a couple of games and still get into the field. And like you said, Dan, once you're in the field, anything can happen when you're in the dance.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I, in even as you're losing those games, one or two or whatever, as things are going along, teams are just going to be, there's so many more people that are going to be watching saying, can we get in? Where do we stand? How do we look? You know, what's the rest of the nation landscape look like? You know, we've said it time and time again on this podcast, but you just exponentially grow the number of teams and fan bases that have a shot at the playoff. And I, as opposed to dampening enthusiasm for the regular season, I think it will increase it. And I can't wait to, you know, see all the jockeying, kind of how it plays out and how the fans react to it.
Yeah. I think for those fan bases that have, and Ole Miss had a couple good seasons here, but those three have not had, they have, I don't know when Missouri's walked into a season thinking playoffs. Tennessee, it's been a while. But those programs have made nice gains and really have that shot to, I don't know. I mean, as we break this down, how many do you think the SEC can, I mean, they're going to get three. Could it be four? It kind of depends on what the Big 12 does. Does it cannibalize itself? Does the ACC cannibalize itself, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it does depend on that. And I'm telling you what, this is one thing now. The SEC especially, but the Big 10 will chime in as well, will be beating people over the head with strength of schedule all season. You're going to hear those three words over and over and over and over, and with good reason, because their schedules are harder now. Now, they did that to themselves, as we've pointed out, that, you know, nobody made them take on these additional league members. But it's going to be our three-loss team is better than your two-loss team or one-loss team or whatever.
Or no-loss team last year. That's what they're claiming. Well, they actually won the argument. Well, they got the result. Here's the thing, though. Like, last year, they did not do well in the non-conference.
No, they didn't.
They lived off of the, because it's always been the rep. It's been hard. It's harder. And generally, I agree. But last year, they were not. And they still, you know, that was the existential question last year. Do you go with an undefeated team? How do you leave an undefeated team out in Florida State? Even if they've lost their quarterback, how do you leave the SEC champion out? Is this even a playoff without the SEC champion? And obviously the committee went with the SEC. But and as much as I think even a Florida State, well, I don't want to speak for Florida State fans because they're understandably angry about it, but it would have been tough to sit there and say, oh, here's our national championship tournament without the S. Well, we don't have that problem anymore. So I certainly could see that this is going to be, yeah, we deserve four teams. And now you're sitting there saying, hey, if I'm Ole Miss, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Missouri, you know, Missouri's schedule is about as easy as you can get for this thing. That's their advantage.
No, it sets up phenomenally well. I mean, four in a row at home against not very good teams, open date, and then at A&M. You got that layup leading into your trip to College Station. Then the mighty at UMass. You got to turn around. You go College Station to Amherst.
Junkyard.
Got to walk into the junkyard. Then you get Auburn at home. Then you're at Alabama. So that October is tough. October, you got three road games, one of which is UMass, admittedly. But still, it's three trips. Alabama, A&M. And you got Auburn coming in. And then, but November, you get Oklahoma in there in an old Big 12, Big 8 throwback game at South Carolina, at Mississippi State, finish with Arkansas. I guarantee, hey, Eli Drinkwitz will take that schedule and say, give us a chance. We got a shot.
You know, I was doing, I did the numbers. We talk about it quite a bit, but the last 10 years, you know, if you apply the playoff, the 12-team playoff. And if you not only apply the playoff, but if you applied realignment as well, which is hard to do, right? It gets a little tricky if you just assume that all these teams are in different leagues and stuff already by using the past results. But I did it anyway. And, you know, last year you would have no at-large teams from any other league except for the SEC and Big 12. Right, you would have none other at large, or SEC and Big Ten. Sorry, SEC and Big Ten. You have no Big 12 second team, no ACC second team, and your Big 12 champion, again, we're applying realignment, would have been Arizona. And they were ranked 14th in the CFP rankings. And then, of course, your ACC champion, Florida State, would have got in. But no other ACC team would have got in. The next best team, I think, was Louisville. They were ranked 15th, so they wouldn't have gotten a at-large spot. You know, but so that's – I don't know that that happens very often, and I think it probably – only happens because, again, you have the Pac-12 that was competing as the Pac-12, and you're trying to put those teams into other leagues. You're so that kind of gets a little tricky there. But I think we talked about this when I was at Big 12 Media Day last week in Vegas. But some of the big talk there was, gosh, can we just at least get a second team in? You know, and so these leagues are just hoping they get a second team in. Not only that. But I swung by Mountain West Media Day, too, and there's a hope there, right, that they will have, you know, that G5 spot, that automatic spot that goes to a group, the best group of five program. The group of fives want a team that is ranked in the top 25, right? Because if you're not ranked in the top 25, you still get that group of five championship spot. But how long is that spot going to exist? If the best G5 team isn't ranked, continuously ranked, you know, and that's kind of a conversation that was had over there.
Better be forever.
Yeah, but guess what?
Good luck with that. Yeah.
They're moving to 14. I mean, you know, that should get protected. I think the Big 12 is going to struggle mightily to get a second team. I think they are just going to be fighting an uphill. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying. I think they are going to have a struggle with that committee when they're sitting there saying, hey, I got a two-loss Kansas State team here, and someone's saying, well, I got a three-loss Tennessee team, and you're going to be – or three-loss Ole Miss or whatever it is, and I just – or Penn State or Michigan or something. It's going to be a battle for the Big 12. It sounds good right now, but – and that I don't think that conference championship game is going to help them.
No, you're right. But I the playoff as it's currently constructed is a two-edged sword for the Big 12 and for the ACC. You're getting a team in no matter what, and they're getting a bye almost assuredly. And so you've got a quarterfinal team. And you may not have somebody that's ranked in the top eight, but you've got a quarterfinal team and one that's going to be, you know, theoretically a little more rested and healthy than whoever they're playing. But it's going to be a struggle to get that second team in.
That's going to be the thing. Let's say you're the three or four seed, you know, okay, your Big 12 champ gets in. Let's say it's Kansas State this year or Utah. Utah won the poll. I guess we'll give it to Utah. And then Alabama's six or Georgia's six. And you're playing them in that quarterfinal and it's not close. That's what's going to, like, they need to show up in those quarterfinal games, especially. If I was a league, I'd rather have two in and not the quarterfinal, the bye appearance. But we'll see, like, if at the end every year. But these are big proving ground years for these other leagues, because the SEC and the Big Ten, you stare at this thing and you go, wow, this is really impressive. All right, one more team in the SEC I want to talk about, Ross, LSU. What are the questions and what, you know, how's Brian Kelly's week going to be?
Yeah. It should be, certainly should be interesting. Obviously, offensively, right. Losing a Heisman Trophy winner, not easy to replace. And I think we talked about this before in the show, but, you know, LSU and USC, we've compared them, right. The first year they exceeded expectations. Brian Kelly's first year, he goes to Atlanta to the SEC championship game and could have potentially had a playoff shot, right, if they'd beaten A&M in the last game of the year. And then, right, last year, even with a Heisman Trophy winner, kind of took a little bit of a dip, just like USC, maybe not to that level. But there's an expectation to get back to where they were in year one. And not only that, but We discussed Nick Saban not being here in a coaching role, at least. That's a more of a pressure point. You maybe don't think of it that way, but at LSU, it is. These fans at LSU have been waiting 10 years for Nick Saban to retire. He's stood in their way many a time to getting to Atlanta to the SEC championship game and to getting maybe a national title. I mean, a lot of them think they should have maybe even a couple more national titles, right, if it wasn't for Nick Saban. He's no longer there, so it's almost like the pressure's ratcheted up because, hey, the guy that stopped us for so long, even though he won some titles in there, obviously, but stopped us from winning more, is no longer there. Now's the time to do it.
Yeah, year three for Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. They went undefeated in the regular season. I'm not sure that's going to happen here, but I never count Brian Kelly out. He's an excellent coach. You're replacing a Heisman Trophy quarterback, but he always has at least serviceable and often very good quarterback play. They did lose Mike Denbrock. Their offensive coordinator went back to Notre Dame, but they're riding the Nuss bus. Garrett Nussmeier, quarterback. We'll see how that goes. There's no shortage of talent at LSU ever. It's interesting they play both Los Angeles schools this year without being in either the Pac-12 or the Big Ten. They play USC in Vegas. They host UCLA. The season, they're another one where they should hit October in really good shape. They've got a trip to South Carolina if they handle that. And if they beat USC, obviously, that's huge in the opener in Vegas. But I could see them being 5-0 hosting Ole Miss October 12th in a game that's got a lot of national attention and implications.
Man, I know we say this every time, but there are just so many big games.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know I wrote a book like 14 years ago about why this would happen if you did a expanded playoff, but it's still like it's finally here. Normally the LSU Ole Miss game is really good game, but not national implications, right? Right. Now it's like, wow, this is a significant game.
Heck yeah. That's the thing. There are layer upon layer of big games. There's A-list games, and the B-list games are really good. And then even the C-list games, a lot of them are going to be interesting.
We will see. My entire force, forward thinking on this will be tested is over the next couple of years. But because when I proposed the big playoff, it was like all anybody in college football focuses on what they're losing. They never can look forward to what they're getting other than money. And it's like there's no imagination. It's just always like what we're losing.
Yeah.
What about that one time? Right. Yeah. And we are losing something. I'm not denying that. You know, although we lost something when they went to four teams, but like that Ohio State Michigan game last year, was something unique. It was a knockout game, although it was supposed to be a knockout game the year before and it wasn't. But it was probably a knockout game and that the stakes were so great. You do lose a little bit, but holy crap, look at all the stuff we're getting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're just going to have these cascades of big games throughout the season.
See, that's why I got we need dedication from the audience. Tune in every episode.
That's right.
Even if you put it on mute and don't listen to us. What do I care?
Download and play. That's all
find
we need.
Find a friend. If everyone would do their part around here, find a friend. Right. Do you have a friend? Let's have a quiz for the audience. Yeah. Question one, do you have a friend? A, yes or no. If you answered no, do you know anyone? Do you work somewhere where there's another person? Do you have a customer if you have your own business? Do you ride a bus to work?
Can you access someone else's phone or computer and do it for them?
Have you ever gone to the grocery store and seen another human being? Get them to listen to the damn podcast. I'm going to get scolded for this. You know, someone left. I made a joke last summer. Tangent, side tangent. I'm going to look this up. I made a joke last summer that people should be listening to our podcast, not New Heights with Travis Kelce and Jason Kelce, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because they already got enough money. We're scrapping along here, folks. It was a joke. Stop listening to Taylor Swift's boyfriend and the two Super Bowl champions. And it's a very entertaining podcast. Go ahead and listen. I don't care. It was a joke. Some guy, one star, I got a one star review, couldn't get past the complaining. First listen ever. This is my luck. Guy listens that day. Fitbit Return. This is the guy's name. Fitbit Return. I kind of like this guy. He should be listening to us. First listen ever, and they complain about people liking other podcasts. I'm here for sports, not about them complaining they don't make enough money. What do you think college football is about? Not making enough money, buddy. Listen, Fitbit Return. How could you take that joke seriously?
Oh, it can be done. It can be done. We know that. We are among the least serious podcasts out there, I like to think. I really do.
But it was like 40 minutes in. It's like now. Like, if you don't get the podcast by now, wait a minute. How dare they tell me not to listen to the Kelce brothers? All right. I mean, come on, people. Anyway, do some work. Okay, so if we get through, you've ever met another human being, then convince them to listen to the podcast. It's membership drive. We're having a membership drive.
We are. We're not going to be as annoying as your public radio station and like just hit you over the head every 5 minutes to
come to your door. PBS. They come. Yeah. They walk around sometimes. You know, we need some money for PBS. Like, don't I already pay taxes on PBS? We got Sesame Street. Like, I watched that a long time ago, man.
We did for our burgeoning YouTube audience. Producer Joe tells me our numbers are actually doing well. Incredible. On YouTube.
Why you'd want to see this, I don't know.
You might have noticed Ross has disappeared.
Yeah, he's Ross gone is to gone. Sorry,
SEC mingling.
Ross has to work this is really it. Poor Ross is working.
Yeah.
Help Ross. We don't actually make any more money. We're just trying to stay alive. That's it. Okay. We need listeners so that we can continue to, you know, this show can continue. So I don't care. Harass some people at the Walmart. Go to a game. Lots of people at the game. Hey, man. Yeah. If you're not listening, what exactly are you doing with your college football season? And don't tell me about the Pong game.
No, the old reliable.
We haven't blasted you with 40 hours of Pong reviews. Yeah. If you're having a funeral at Brian Denny in an off week, play the pod.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a sermon, right? Maybe I should have like a basic eulogy. We have many pastors that listen against all odds, by the way. Ooh. The pastors listen.
You know what? A kind right, of a one it. Size all right. fits
so
all.
So Ross is gone, but we did got to get to. You want me to do this? You know, dearly beloved.
Yeah, no, a one size fits all eulogy. You were a great fan of, and then you know you kind of slip in the school.
We bury you today.
At
we wish we could get the members. We should get that one terrible coaching staff so they can let you down one last time. You know, we could do it.
That could be a side gig for us.
I don't know. Whatever. It's a gig economy, Pat. It's a gig economy. If I got to write eulogies, then that's what we're going to do. All right. We'll be back right after this break. All right. One last SEC story. This is just amazing that this continues. But in the last week, three more Georgia football players were arrested for reckless driving. Now, we have gone through this. This was the story going into last year's SEC Media Day with Kirby Smart. And he talked about, what do you want me to do? And, I we don't want him driving and all this stuff. Obviously, we had the unbelievably tragic situation in January of 2023 after the national championship game where football player Devin Willock and a recruiting analyst Chandler LaCroix were both killed in a crash after everyone was celebrating. Again, a high-speed, reckless driving situation there. We had Jalen Carter that overtook the NFL draft for a little while. He was speeding. There was, let's see, we got Fox 5 in Atlanta made a nice little list here, sadly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 previous arrests for speeding, reckless driving. Basically, these guys are drag racing. Now we got three more. I mean, one's at 8:30. Not that there's a proper time to do this, but 8:37 at night. I mean, there's a lot of traffic. And 11:05 is another. What? He doesn't seem to lay. Someone's got to get thrown off this team, right? I don't know. I mean, obviously, getting arrested, dying, a player dying, a teammate dying, has not been enough to stop this. Guys getting arrested have not been enough to stop this. Jalen Carter's draft stock dropping. A player of that quality dropping in the draft and losing money has not stopped this. What is going on, and why is it at Georgia? Is this the only police department cover? I mean, what is going on at Georgia? I don't get it.
Yeah. To me, I just think Kirby Smart has come up so small in this. He's continued to basically shrug and say, we're educating them, you know, and we're disciplining them internally, of course, with no details of that. And at some point, you have to try to fix what is very clearly broken and not keep saying the same things and doing the same things and saying, well, you know, we're trying over here. It's not working. It's not working. And this is serious. This is life and death, like you said. And these are dangerous situations. I'm going to read you from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, one of the most recent ones. Bo Hughley, offensive lineman, who was traveling with five-star signee defensive back Ellis Robinson in his car. This is a July 12th story. Hughley's vehicle, Chrysler 300, failed to negotiate a curve. This is right near campus, East Campus Village area. Failed to negotiate a curb, struck the curb on the right side of the vehicle, crossed pedestrian crosswalk as it left the roadway, sheared off a 25-mile-an-hour speed limit sign at the ground, ran through grass and pine straw before returning to the roadway and coming to a rest in the street. The vehicle was disabled because the right front tire had been completely torn off and was found in a ditch a considerable distance away. This was at 6:28 p.m., they tried to say they were traveling the speed limit. The cops looked at video and then looked at the 200-foot damage path and said, maybe you weren't.
They have science on this, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they can kind of figure that shit out. So, you know, I mean, look, if you can't suspend anybody, you can't kick anybody off the team, I'm sorry, that is weak leadership, in my opinion. There need to be bigger consequences, and there haven't been. I wrote about it last year from Nashville, and it hadn't stopped.
No,
it hadn't stopped.
No, I mean, scorn on the program. As I said, we've had deaths. We've had what would work? He has to do something. It's pure luck that someone wasn't walking along that path. It's pure luck that someone wasn't standing there waiting for a bus, wasn't riding their bike, wasn't playing in their yard. It was a bunch of kids riding down the street. It's pure luck. I mean, I know Kirby Smart does not want this. I mean, I'm not saying anybody at Georgia wants this, and I'm not saying they're cavalier to this, but something has to stop before this story is not something that people on a college football podcast talk 40 minutes in, and it's, oh my God, a completely innocent civilian. I don't want any of the deaths or any of the injuries, but right. Simply in the, like, this is what could, if it's simply self-preservation of the Georgia Athletic Department, this is what can take y'all down.
Right.
I mean, there, hopefully it ends, right? We never get any. But like, it's simply an illegal standpoint. Like, if there was ever a time when someone is injured and could sue the University of Georgia for negligence of their players, this fact pattern, you're done.
Yeah. The lawsuit would be a monster.
And hopefully we don't get that, because that means someone got hurt or worse. But I don't, whatever is attempted has not worked. And so maybe it has to be a more immediate thing. Obviously, there is drag racing all over this country. I live right off of a road where it's famous for, like, back to the 50s of cruising and drag. There's drag racers out there all the freaking time. It's terrible. And the police try, but they can't really stop all the guys speeding, and they get all their souped up cars and stuff like that. It's like, this is not, I don't know. Maybe Georgia needs to build themselves a track or something for these guys to drive around on. This is just absolutely incredible that this is continuing. We get on Mike Gundy for the two or three beers or four. Well, this is a pattern of players. You know, you didn't suspend Ollie Gordon. Well, what about these guys? There's no difference. You're driving 100 miles an hour down a city street. That's absolutely as reckless, if not more reckless or more dangerous, than having a 0.1 blood alcohol level. They're both absolutely not acceptable.
Right. No. In a lot of these cases, too, we got young, inexperienced drivers with incredibly fast cars. One of the guys, there was the classic SEC Dodge Charger. One of them was driving here in one of these recent arrests, and then somebody else was in a Porsche. And there might be more horsepower than some of these guys are ready to handle. So you're set up for some issues there, but there's got to be a greater disincentive than's been applied.
I mean, Kyle Larson wouldn't be driving, No. Those guys drive fancy cars, specific cars. You don't do this. I understand the power that Georgia has. I understand the get in line, and I applaud the police for keep going after these guys and arresting them.
Yeah.
But they need to arrest more, because there's probably more. But I understand, you can't say anything against the program. This is, if I'm a citizen of Athens, or I have my child going to school at Athens, this is absolutely terrifying. These are just loaded bullets getting fired down the street. Mm-hmm. And maybe, fortunately, there hasn't been any more deaths, but we're still less than 2 years from the last ones. So it is the most, it's stunning to keep seeing it. And I'm sure it's stunning inside of Georgia, but I don't know. Maybe you have to throw people out of the school.
Yeah.
As a very, very immediate thing, because the long-term possibilities of you might die, your draft stock's going to get hurt, you could get arrested. These three things have not done it. It's just crazy. So I don't know what will do it. But
time to try something different from a disincentive standpoint.
Yeah, it is a thing. All right, one little leftover from Big 12 media days was this little bit that UCF quarterback KJ Jefferson, who used to be at Arkansas, love KJ Jefferson as a player, and him with the running attack of Gus Malzahn at UCF is going to be very, very interesting. Gus is good at getting space for quarterbacks to run, and KJ's coming down the pipe at you. You got to make a business decision on whether you're tackling KJ. I think this is going to be a very interesting season for KJ Jefferson. Anyway, he has a locker, obviously, at UCF, and he has this picture, a printout. Love it. They're always putting those, like, painting these special things, right? Tough times don't last. Tough people do. Like, they're always painting things on the wall. He's just got this little printout. Dot matrix printer. Picture of Shador Sanders, Colorado quarterback, and a quote, which I guess was from Skip Bayless. Probably nobody has ever provided more locker room printout stuff than Skip Bayless. He's not just the best QB in the Big 12 conference, but he's the best QB in the country. That is a picture of Shador Sanders. KJ Jefferson has it hanging in his locker. Said, I was just looking for some in-house motivation to make sure that I have a competitive edge and making sure that I'm going into each situation, each day, each practice, each film session, each OTA with a competitive edge and the chip on my shoulder. It just gives you that edge, that fire to make sure you don't take anything for granted. I don't really know that that statement that he's the best QB in the country is like some shocker of all on Skip Bayless lines through the years would rank fairly in non-contract. Yeah, right. He might be. We'll see. He's good. But this lends credence to the line that Shedeur Sanders said, who said that got a lot of attention, that Colorado is, quote, everybody's Super Bowl. We know we're everybody's Super Bowl. And he got a lot of heat for that because they went 4-8 last year. But and his thing is they're look at Colorado wants the attention. They command the attention. They get the attention. And then they get this. But he seems to know it and embrace it, as the Sanders family tends to do. I will give them this much, starting with Prime himself as a player. He'll talk it, but then he'll deal with the consequences. You talk that much smack and play two pro sports with everybody trying to get you. You gotta deal with it. So is Colorado everyone's Super Bowl, Pat? And is KJ Jefferson got or is KJ Jefferson proved that, or is this just a lot of more Sanders family hype?
Yeah, if Colorado's everyone's Super Bowl, then the Carolina Panthers are everyone's Super Bowl at the next level, where they actually have a Super Bowl.
8 Super Bowl champions last year. It's very exciting. Plus the Chiefs, 9.
Yeah, right. There you go. You
get to keep losing the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they lost the Super Bowl to Stanford, by golly.
Yeah.
That's a bad beat in the Super Bowl. No, I mean, to a degree. And what you said is Colorado puts itself out there. Sanders family puts themselves out there. And so you do ratchet up the motivation. They give the bulletin board material. That's all they do. They walk around spewing bulletin board material. People are going to take it. Do you remember? I mean, Dan Lanning, like, foaming at the mouth last year at Oregon when 3-0 Colorado was coming in. Like, they couldn't wait to jump on the Buffaloes. So at that point, that was a Super Bowl game. Once they started losing, I'm not sure that still held up. But you're telling me Colorado at Nebraska week 2. Colorado beat Nebraska and stormed the field last year. That's going to be a Super Bowl game in Lincoln. Colorado at Colorado State week 3. Buffaloes came from behind to win that in like triple OT at 2 a.m. That'll be a Super Bowl game for the Rams. So there will be some games where people will absolutely be fired up to have Colorado coming, and see, you better be ready. I'm not sure they're going to be everybody's Super Bowl, but there's enough people that are circling them on the calendar.
Absolutely agree. It's like Notre Dame, right? Even when Notre Dame was bad, everyone was fired up to play them. You know, it's just you want to beat them. You know, the rest of your life, you're going to be able to say, hey, oh yeah, I played college football. Oh, really? Where? You know, I mean, most people who play are not going to become household names or anything like that. And you say, oh, I played it, you know, wherever. And it's like, yeah, we beat Colorado. Oh yeah, what years? Oh, we played Prime and Sanders' brother. Oh, we won. Yeah, beat. Oh, that's a bit right. Oh, we went into Notre Dame Stadium, won a game. Like, right, like that. UConn beat them once. Like all that type of stuff. It's defining. They won't just walk around and say it. They will film themselves saying it and then put it on their YouTube channel.
Yes. The second most entertaining YouTube channel in college football after ours.
Yes, after ours.
Yeah.
It is the thing about Colorado. It's amazing. It's so funny that in college sports for so many years, it's been like protect the access. Access to, you know, we'll bring in 3 players, but it'll be very controlled. And post game interview, first question will be to the radio announcer who basically works for us. And like everything's very controlled. And then all of a sudden now they're showing more. But Colorado just sits there and is like, oh, we had this private team meeting. Let's just film it. No filter. They don't care.
No, they don't care.
I,
right.
I wish Coach Prime was running his program a little more traditionally. Like, I recruit high school athletes. Like, I am going to use the fame and the aura that I have to show up at some high schools and grab this five star and like do the recruiting a little bit differently. Cause I really think if he did that, he could build a powerhouse at Colorado. He's choosing not to do that. But I also appreciate anyone who wants to do it differently. And he does so many other things I wouldn't do that maybe asking him to fit into this box wouldn't work. But their ability to just sit there and say the craziest stuff that, I mean, if we've all done, you know, all access pieces, or you're in a meeting, sometimes they'll let you in meetings or watch, and the coach, like, I can't use that. Right. Something gets a little over the line there. Because they want you to believe that, you know, coach like Saban will walk around all week talking about the other team's so good, and, you know, respect for Middle Tennessee and all this stuff like he is at his press conference. You know what he's saying in the.
No. Yeah. In the staff room, they're sitting there saying, yeah, we're going to destroy the right cornerback. We're going at him all day.
And film room. Look at, like, listen, Jones, if you don't beat the hell out of that kid every single play. And sack the court, like, you are, you know, I mean, that's what they're saying, because that's real. And for all of sports, we haven't been able to see that. We have to pretend that they go into the, you know, just do your best, you know, put a good effort out there. It's a quality opponent across the way. That's not how you motivate people. Not prime. So, plenty of respect for that. Plenty of respect for that. I don't know. I think they are the Super Bowl of every team you play. I think circle it.
Well, AJ Jefferson and UCF gets them in Orlando, I think in early October.
I mean, how about a little spice for a Colorado-UCF matchup?
Why not?
Was second UConn reference. Was it the civil conflict? Was that the rivalry UConn created between UCF?
Yes. That's some terrible trophy. And,
remember this, Randy Edsel, I believe it was Edsel's idea. He was trying to get some excitement. I get what he was trying to do, because it was tough for UConn it's always tough for UConn, but it was tough when they were in the American and they didn't have any rivals other than the annual New England United game. That's the real civil conflict. Against UMass. They probably weren't even playing UMass at that point. But he invented a trophy. They created a trophy and declared UCF their rival and had a countdown clock. And word got back to UCF and they were like, what?
UConn? Really?
And like, you see that occasionally in sports with like Oklahoma State's biggest rivals, Oklahoma. And Oklahoma's like, what? You know, right?
Yeah. We're worried about Texas over
Michigan.
Here.
I worry about Ohio State, Michigan State, little brother, all that stuff. And then little brother starts beating them. Then they start caring. But there was no in-state. There was nothing. Connecticut people to Disney World in the winter? Like, what is it?
the ultimate example of like, we are on an island of misfit toys and we just got to pick a toy that we have a beef with.
We need somebody to argue with. Yeah.
Yeah.
The civil conflict. Quick people's court here. Comes out of Mount Juliet, Tennessee. A woman already wanted on some charges was arrested during a police stop after police searched her car and found enormous number of appear to be burritos wrapped in Taco Bell wrappers. There was a lot of burritos in her car. Taco Bell burritos. As the department wrote, not your average Taco Bell order. So the authorities, good work by the police there in Mount Juliet, Tennessee, was a little nervous about this. So they started unwrapping the burritos and they found, they were not those tasty meals in there. It was, meth, LSD, THC, and fentanyl laced gummies. Good God. Pills and marijuana all wrapped like a burrito. And they got like Taco Bell wrappers as part of the thing, apparently. And so they arrested this woman. So my question, Pat, do you give, you know, thoughts? Do you get any break if you, for incorporating the Taco Bell wrapper to try to disguise it? Or was this just stupid because who the hell would have that many Taco Bell burritos in their car?
Well, no, I'm a little bit lenient here because I think they were at least giving the appearance of being very like recycling cognizant by like, we're not going to throw away our Taco Bell wrappers for who knows, like 18 months because we're going to save them for drug trafficking. I don't know. I mean, you go through the drive-thru like every Tuesday for a year and like, hey, don't throw away the wrapper. We're going to need that wrapper. When the big shipment comes in, we got to be ready. So, you know, points for almost being environmentally friendly. But after that, no, you're probably losing right there.
I would think it's like an inside job. River. Go ask the assistant manager at the local Taco Bell. If I bought a bunch of your, you know, 500, you know, five, I mean, they're moving a lot of product here. A lot of weight getting moved here.
A lot.
Maybe $200. Give me a bunch of the brat. Yeah, sure. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Pat, and give him a whole box of wrappers. I think it was ingenious if it's like one, like you got to have a little bag with like two burritos. What are you doing? I got just went and bought some burritos at Taco Bell. All right. When you got like 40 burritos, you got to be like, what? Like, is a party? It's book club. What the hell are you doing with that many burritos? Why does this car not smell of
exactly
Taco Bell Delight? Right, there would be no smell.
Yeah, the scale is the problem here. They got a little too greedy, as often happens. But that would be the first clue if you're the officers pulling them over. Like the car doesn't just reek of onions and beans and everything else that goes along with a burrito, hot sauce. Then there's clearly something amiss here. And if there's not like a bunch of sauce leaking onto the wrappers too, you know, I mean, they Taco Bell, like a burrito supreme, I'm sorry, those things don't stay together that well. So there's usually going to be some sauce leaking out.
Yeah. You'd probably have like some variety, right?
Yeah.
You know, there'd be some tacos.
Throw a chalupa in there.
Yeah. You're right.
Quesadilla.
Mexican pizza, whatever you got, right? Some kind of
supreme,
some kind of situation in there. Mexicali melt. They got French fries now. I don't know.
Do they really?
Yeah.
That runs counter to their ethos.
Well, you get breakfast. I think most of my
breakfast. Yeah, you can get a breakfast burrito.
Yeah, French fries. Thrown in there. I don't know. I mean, is there really an ethos to Taco Bell other than...
you're intoxicated and need a lot? Fast.
I want to know. We have listeners at the Burger King headquarters. Big Whopper. Remember that?
Yes. It
reached out recently.
Deep Whopper.
Big Whopper, I think, was willing to get you into a Burger King. I have to relook at this message.
Yeah.
Get you inside a Burger King for 24 hours to do that same thing that Joe did. I think they were mad that McDonald's got the pub off of that. I'll have to ask him what the proper situation here is, what his thoughts on this wrapper situation. Do they have to guard against? Because you could do this with Burger King too. Anyway,
sure.
I give credit for the ingenious effort to try to make it look like you had a, but I think you actually drew more attention when you just have a random woman already out on a warrant. Anyway, props to Mount Juliet Police Department.
There you go.
Making America safer. Making America safer.
That's right. No runs for the border on our watch.
No, stay out of that town. They're not going to fall for your little Taco Bell head fake. We know you got fentanyl laced gummies. What is that? For like the fentanyl user that won't smoke? Like what? How do you take fentanyl anyway?
I don't know.
I prefer a gummy. I don't like I don't want to inhale the smoke. It's bad for my lungs. You're taking fentanyl. I don't know. This is good. I don't know about this stuff. Anyway, that's our show. We'll be back later in the week with more talking season. Continue to subscribe. Talk to you later.